I want to take a moment to let folks know that there is a special event coming up this Saturday. It's a fundraiser for 5th Street Dick's Coffee House in beloved Leimert Park. And 5th Street Dick's is a very important establishment in the area. It's one of the places that's really incubated a vibe that has really grown into something quite special over the last 10, 15 years, and we're glad to have 5th Street Dick's back with us. It was gone for a little while, and it's been revived on Degnan. And at this particular fundraiser, there's going to be a film screening of a wonderful documentary on Leimert Park itself. So this is actually the perfect place to see this screening in one of the vital establishments in Leimert, 5th Street Dick's. And this film is by Jeanette Lindsay. She's done a wonderful job on this documentary. She is the wife of Steve Iswardi, who's done some wonderful documentation work as well on music in and around Leimert Park, specifically Horace Tapscott. He edited Horace's autobiography, Songs of the Unsung, and just recently has published The Dark Tree, Jazz and the Community Arts in Los Angeles. I got a chance to speak with Jeanette Lindsay earlier this week, had a wonderful conversation, and I took pieces of that conversation and pieces of the film and put them together in a little montage, just so you get a sense of this excellent documentary. It starts out with the great poet Kamal Dawood and co-founder of the World Stage kind of giving a walking tour of Leimert Park. Let's listen.
Of course, this is the famous park over here, the Leimert Park. It's always been a space for social gathering. All right. What's up, Ndugu? All right. A lot of little gift shops and stuff around here, you know. I don't know exactly what they're putting in this new place, you know.
The spirit of the place is very, very rich, you know. I mean, and the history of the development and growth of this place is very, very rich.
We interviewed Tim Leimert, who is Walter Leimert's grandson, and he was there turning over the first shovel of dirt in Leimert Park. Leimert Park was a swamp.
There was a ranch owned by Lucky Baldwin's daughter out in the Crenshaw, which is now the Crenshaw area. And he bought that with a group of people, and that is what is now known as Leimert Park. And he bought that property and started subdividing it. Got a big loan from the Pacific Mutual Life Insurance Company to develop it. Unfortunately, the Depression hit, and it just about wiped him out. So Leimert Park was not a financial success, although it was a extremely well thought of development, because it combined both residential, business, and multiple family. And of course, in those days, all areas, or lots of areas, had racial restrictions, and I don't think my father was particularly fond of them, but I think the banks required them. And then, of course, the Supreme Court ruled that those were absolutely illegal, and the minorities could live anywhere.
The next voices you'll hear come from some elders talking in Chief's barbershop about the less than hospitable to black people Leimert Park of the 1950s.
I remember the Leimert Theater, and I remember LAPD asking you, hey, nigga, where you going? And you say, I'm going to Leimert Theater. And they tell you, take your black ass home when you come out. I remember that. And that was not that long ago.
The first black student who went to Fremont, they put a dummy up on the flagpole with a rope around his neck, showing him what happened to people of color who go to the school. right at Fremont, and I lived in that area.
I moved into Leimert Park in 1954. Someone, fellow in Leimert Park in 1954, told my mother, self, that we could come look at his house at night. So we looked at the house at night. He agreed to sell it to us. But after we looked at it, he said, don't come back. Don't come back until we've done the paperwork elsewhere and I'm gone. And it was the week before Easter in 1954, we moved into Leimert Park. Now, things changed in Leimert Park, but that's not the same Leimert Park that we're talking about today.
But you must have been one of the first black families to move in there.
I don't think so. Nope, surely on that block.
Watts, 1965.
6 days of rioting in the Negro section of Los Angeles left behind scenes reminiscent of war-torn cities. More than 100 square blocks were decimated by fire and looters, and few buildings were left intact.
Here's where you'd see historic footage from the Watts Uprising, an event that's very significant to Leimert Park on a number of levels, some of which are explored elsewhere in the film. Of course, the music is that of Horace Tapscott, Ancestral Echoes. Next, we hear from Dale Brockman. Dale and his brother Alonzo were the first to really breathe artistic life into the neighborhood back in 1967 when they opened up the Brockman Gallery.
I guess the major turn on Leimert Park and our relationship to it was driving back to Jackson, Mississippi for the March on Jackson. So we drove back as students. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was young, but, you know, I knew what was going on. And it was at that point that Alonzo and I, you know, tremendous number of hours together, conversation after conversation, entertaining each other. But in the meantime, the idea came up that, you know, what do you think about the possibility of having a gallery in Leimert Park? We didn't know. We knew what we were doing. We knew we were touching on a good thing. But
well, what
we didn't.
Your intention?
To provide an arena, to provide an outlet for minority artists. And it was not necessarily for black artists only, by any means. We were all going through the same...
That was the way we were thinking then.
Yeah.
You know.
The same. We're all looking for the same opportunity.
John Outerbridge.
Something very magic was happening during that period that was all motivated by the energy of the movement of the civil rights era. The fact that we were trying to facilitate ourselves as a people as best we could, and especially a group of artists related to, if we're going to be activists, we're going to be activists in that arena of the arts and culture.
That was artist John Outerbridge. You'll hear from him again in a moment.
Brockman Gallery was taking care of, in concept, the needs of a lot of people, a lot of artists. And we, in turn, were feeding Brockman Gallery as a very necessary facility that created a language that started to speak outside of the community. Later on, the gallery grew into the kind of social event that brought people to Leimert Park from all over the city of Los Angeles, very sophisticated audiences. People who purchased and acquired works from museums were coming to the exhibits at Brockman Gallery, you know, and it was just the place, simply that. You can meet anyone at any time.
Even Billy Higgins.
Kamal Daoud asked me about, you know, being partners in a situation at the stage. So we started from that, and it grew and grew. And we've been there for 12 years. We didn't have the slightest idea that it would go, it would do like it would. The different young people, I mean Black Note, when they were coming into existence, I mean, I saw them start out and saw how serious they were. And they made me understand that a lot of the stuff why I was even there. So you see that all this trying to do this is not in vain. That's the biggest thing that I got out of it and still get out of it, you know.
That was the late, great Billy Higgins, co-founder of the World Stage and the most recorded drummer in the world ever.
In this town, they can put you in a frame of mind where you're nothing. It's Hollywood. You know, Hollywood has got you bent over backwards. It's not talent. It's like, well, how can you fool somebody? It's not about art. So that can frustrate people that's trying to do something, that's serious about something. You know, if you're serious about what you're doing, it can frustrate you very much so.
I had the most amazing interviews to work with and such a great story to tell down there that couldn't go wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, it was one of those things where I had no idea. Each time I'd go into an interview, I'd think, oh, I know what this is going to be. And we had a set interview format. And without exception, each time I'd hear somebody's story and just be blown away to hear what they had gone through and their life and how amazing they were and charismatic and just wonderful, wonderful people.
Jeanette Lindsay was particularly impressed, and rightly so, with Richard Fulton, the late founder of Fifth Street Dicks.
Richard was, he was such an amazing interview. He was such a surprise. I just loved it. I got it home and I started looking at it and I couldn't believe how, he just jumped off the screen and the things that he said were amazing. And I was completely surprised. I had no idea that that's the kind of person he was.
How did I start? I didn't start with nothing. I'm from Skid Row. I spent 6 years on Skid Row. I found this place by accident. I was building the Alcoholics Anonymous around the corner. And I walked around the corner one day and I saw Fifth Street, which was up here originally. And it had everything that I thought about. See, I always wanted a coffee house. I've always wanted a coffee house. I said, from the day one I tasted in the 60s when I went to the first coffee house. It got turned on to jazz. Well, I was turned on to jazz before that, but it really sounds good coming out of a coffee house. You know, for 30 years I've dreamed about this. You know, but I didn't have a dime. So I went to the landlord and I told him I didn't have a whole bunch of money. But I remodeled their place with some free rent. So I remodeled it, put another floor in it, all that good stuff like that, and worked on it every day. I just did something every day. I just sweep or scrape or something. I did something every day. Just made sure I did one thing. It took me about a year and a half. You know, I got about 8 months free rent. It took me about a year and a half. And I was sitting on the steps of the guy that has a clothing shop now, Gary. I asked him, oh, what should I do now? He said, well, shit, you've been in this for 2 weeks. Why don't you just open? You know. So I opened.
It was just great. It was such a great vibe. I keep saying was. I mean, it still is going on. But there was something about that particular period of time that was just magic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the period that I think of is after the uprising.
Yeah, 92 was really a turning point for Lamert. People in the film talk about that, how 92, people really needed a place to express themselves. Mm-hmm. And there were places down there. Fifth Street Dicks was the gathering spot after 92. Richard opened Fifth Street Dicks 3 days before 92 happened.
The people in this community thought that this building was going to burn down. They came in here, young, old, Asian, Mexican, and moved everything out of this building across the street.
I'm passing out free coffee. We're doing all these things. Protecting Marla's building from burning down. Protecting took all of Brian's the Museum of Blacks, took all his stuff out of his shop. And we thought it was gonna, the fire was gonna jump over from the Negley Market. Thought it was gonna jump over. We took all the stuff out of the shop, standing in the middle of the street. Nothing was stolen. We didn't have anything lost. When the fire subsided, we put it all back. That's how we started. That's how our harmony was. And that's how Lamert Park came together. That's how Lamert Park came together. That's how Lamert Park became Lamert Park. Because of 92. Because everybody stayed. And we all got to know each other. And we all became a community right then and there.
And that's the late Richard Fulton. My name is Mark Maxwell. I'm your humble facilitator of the Sounds of the Creator, and this is Rise. You're listening to it on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, 98.7 FM, Santa Barbara County. And we're taking a look at a new documentary about Lamert Park, and this documentary is going to be screened in the most optimum place that it could be screened, this Saturday at Fifth Street Dick's, as part of a fundraiser for Fifth Street Dick's. That's located at 4305 Degnan Boulevard in Lamert Park, and this will be at 8 p.m. We're going to dive back into it in just a moment. I got a chance, as I said, to speak with the filmmaker of this movie, Lamert Park, Jeanette Lindsay, and that was last week. And we played a little bit of the movie and a little bit of the interview, and we're going to go back into that, starting with some poets from the Anansi Poetry Workshop. This is something that's been taking place for over a decade at the World Stage on Wednesday nights. It's a beautiful, beautiful situation. You're first going to hear the voice of, I believe, Imani Toliver.
I think that ultimately what all that stuff is about is about love. And I think that when I'm here, I feel like I can freely love. I can express love. I can, you know, be myself.
But it just that kind of love where men open up their hearts on stage in front of everybody and say, here.
That's exactly it, too.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
You know, that macho business goes down the drain.
All that stuff on TV, it's like, that's not who my men are.
No.
I mean, when
no,
I see that stuff on TV, those are strangers to me. I mean, my men cry, and my men love each other, and my men pray together, and, you know, my men say what they feel, and my men cherish each other, and are hurt, and are broken, but are strong, and are still learning and unfolding. I mean, that's who my men are, and that's who they are here, you know? And and I know that's who they are everywhere else.
Yeah.
So when I'm walking down the street and some slim is acting funky, through my own interaction and my own relationships with the men here, I feel like I know who they really are, and it's okay, you know?
It is a place that demands honesty from you when you come around, because you're going to meet one person after another who is getting butt naked on the mic telling their story, testifying about their pains and how to overcome their pains, or to learn how to, who have learned how to paint pain with beauty using words.
Lady Walker Vereen.
Teaching to me has never been the chore. The work that I have to do to support myself to do the teaching is in the chore. And I decided when I was in the classroom to give my whole self. Every class that I teach to give my whole self. I teach to give all my knowledge. And I represent so many people who have taught me and who have loved me, who have shared with me. And when I move from my experiences, not just because this music sounds like this and the movement says to do this, but because the spirit hears something, even in the recordings, the spirit hears something within you. The spirit within you hears something, and it wants to move, and it wants to use your body as an instrument to move. That's why we call it dancing. If you train this body and you give it technique and you love yourself when you're fat and when you're too tall and you're too short and you're too black and you're too whatever, that you love yourself through it and you're able to allow the spirit to be free in your body. And whatever the music is, allow your body to play it out. And I ask the Lord, if you give me the youth in my body to make this happen, then I'll always give it back to the community, to the little kid who don't know that this is happening on the outer, bigger, sparkly world. And if they don't have wills and wishes in their little hearts and minds, they won't go there.
Right here on the corner, this is Ben Caldwell's place. Ben is a media artist.
What I just wanted to do, and the reason I think I got involved with a lot of the politics of media, was to see how you could change it through the media, you know, because that's how I got the information. So to me, it was very logical that I should work through that medium to change the concept of how people have seen. You know.
So we did try to put a lot of the history in, but when I realized what I didn't know, I realized how much more important it was for me to document this. I didn't want it to be lost. I wanted everybody to remember, even if it ended, for everybody to remember this period of time, because I thought it was so important to see the effect that music and art and just a few people can have on an entire community. You know, you think, oh, I can't do this, or they didn't. They just went out there and did it and scrabbled and made it happen and changed a lot of people's lives. Just a beautiful, beautiful time.
I do still feel that sometimes going when the orchestra plays and you go down the street, and not necessarily just being at the world stage and hearing the arc, but just the people that have come out, and Ajita's down the street doing the drum circle. There are people in the Jamaican spot across from Fifth Street Dick's.
Right, right.
And Lucy Florence Coffee House. Yeah. And they're all kind of bubbling. M&M's, the soul food place, has people coming in and out. And it feels pretty vibrant. It does feel a little bit like it was.
But it does feel different. Part of that is because we lost so many of kind of the leaders down there. Horace, Billy, and Richard all passed away within less than a two-year period. And that was just really hard for the community to grapple with. And some of the other changes, but even with all those changes that have gone on, with Museum in Black having to leave, the Dance Collective, even with all of that going on, the people that have stayed really understand the importance of it. And they're making it happen. It's like you're saying, even though it's different, there's still that same feeling down there. And I think we were talking about this the other day, that there's a sense that things are starting to change, that this could be happening again in a really strong way, which would be fantastic.
The need is there.
You see some of the new kids playing down there and just really passionate about the music. And some of the really seasoned musicians, I mean, Steve Smith's band is playing on, what is it, Friday nights now at Fifth Street Dick's, and Azar Lawrence is playing at the world stage quite a bit. And then you've got Kamasi Washington.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, the first time I heard that guy play, I couldn't believe it. The sound he has, it's just great. So he's down there every Tuesday night. So there's a lot of things still going on down there. I don't want to make it sound like it's dead now. It's not. So it's the magic of art. I thought it would be very appropriate to show the film at Fifth Street Dick's. So Irma has reopened Fifth Street Dick's, and I went down and approached her, and of course she loved the idea, and we decided to have it be a fundraiser for Fifth Street Dick's. So we're going to show the film Saturday, June 10th at 8 o'clock. Hopefully we'll be packed. It'll be really great.
It will be really great. I got a chance to see the film in its entirety, actually just today, and it's very, very moving, powerful documentary. It's full length, and this is something you have to understand. You just heard the audio from this. The visuals are a whole, you know, they say a picture tells 1,000 words. Moving pictures, how many do they tell? many, many. So this is really just part of the experience that you just got. Definitely something that will be wonderful to see this coming Saturday in Leimert Park in Fifth Street Dix. And it's an opportunity also to help support this community, specifically the establishment Fifth Street Dix. It's located at 5305 Degnan in Leimert Park. Degnan is one block east of Crenshaw Boulevard. As I said, 8 p.m. is the time for that one. Well, definitely thank you very much to Jeanette Lindsay.